It was March in the year of 1865. I was 17. I sensed I was in danger.
Always frightened, Maud. And with reason.
My French governess, Madame de la Rogière, had been dismissed. I had discovered her rifling my father's desk. I now know she was seeking his will.
Farewell, my dearest little Maud. I will never cease to think of you. And you, I think, will never cease to think of me.
I had been accosted by strange men in the grounds of our house.
Don't be frightened, miss. It's only a bit of chat.
I now realize they intended to abduct me. My father was taken from me by a seizure.
Open the door!
I can't. Use the cross. Shove it. Shove it, for God's sake. I can't shift him.
Leaving me heir to the family's wealth and estates, which were substantial.
I also appoint Silas Aylmer Ruffin, the guardian of my daughter, Maud.
My father's will made my uncle Silas my guardian until I was 21, when he would render my inheritance to me.
And to whom will the property belong in case my little cousin should die before she comes of age?
Why, her uncle, Mr. Silas Ruffin.
I had never met my uncle Silas. My father would not talk of him.
It has to be acknowledged, your uncle Silas was suspected of committing a murder.
And now my cousin Monica was the only person who could tell me the story.
We present George Cole as Silas Ruffin and Teresa Gallagher as his niece Maud in Uncle Silas by Sheridan Lefanu.
Cousin Monica?
Yes, Maud?
You are dejected.
Yes, Maud.
Is it because of the will? I wish you to tell me more about Uncle Silas.
It is 20 years now since I saw him. I did not choose to visit his house.
Was that before the dreadful occurrence at Bartram House?
Yes, dear, before. He was not a reformed rake then, only a vicious one.
Has my aunt been long dead?
12 or 15 years, more indeed. She died before your poor mamma.
Did you like her?
My dear, she was a coarse, vulgar woman. And then came that odious business about wretched Mr. Chark. You know, he committed suicide at Bartram.
And Uncle Silas...
And Uncle Silas was suspected by some people of having murdered him.
But you did not suspect him.
No, of course I did not.
Who was Mr. Chark?
Mr. Chark was, my dear, a gentleman of the turf. He was at Matlock Races, and your uncle invited him to Bartram Howe.
But why?
Your uncle's finances had collapsed. He was as hungry as a hawk. They said he swooped upon this rich London gamester, intending to win his money. Mr. Chark made heavy wagers with him in the races, and they played very deep besides at Bartram. He and Silas would sit up at night at cards.
And why did Mr. Chark kill himself?
Well, I will tell you first what all are agreed about. The morning after the races, Mr. Chark's servant was at his master's door.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, sir. Mr. Chark. Mr. Chark. Mr. Chark.
Is there anything untoward?
Oh, Mr. Ruffin, sir. It's Mr. Chark. I can't raise a reply.
Then do not stand on ceremony. Go in.
Oh, it's locked.
Lawrence? Lawrence, let us in. It's Silas. Lawrence, open the door. We shall have to break it down.
They did so.
Lord Silas! Mr. Chalk!
He's dead, man. He's cut his throat. A pond of blood. Do not touch anything. All must be as we found it. I'm a justice of the peace. Together we will compile a record of what has been found.
Could anything be more straightforward, more right and wise?
Oh, nothing, of course.
Send for the coroner. Dr. Slaithwaite.
Mr. Ruthin, a dreadful business.
The poor man took his own life, I think.
Oh, what leads you to that conclusion?
Observe. We broke open the door, did we not?
Yes, sir.
And where was the key?
It's in the lock, on the inside.
He had locked himself in.
I begin to see your direction. The window?
You will note it is screwed shut, also from the inside. Wyatt had instructions to do that before Mr. Chark retired. You can ask Wyatt. You can ask her.
And the courtyard, outside the window?
It is in the middle of the house and completely enclosed by it.
The entry is choked with weeds.
Yes. Yes, it has not been used these 10 years.
And, Mr. Ruthin, the chimney?
You.
Sir?
The chimney.
Oh, sir.
What do you see?
There's an iron bar across it at the top of the flue.
Could you get past it?
No, sir.
And I will have the wainscoting taken off to prove there is no other means of ingress.
Why, Mr. Ruthin, are you so eager to establish the suicide?
The rumour, Dr. Slaithwaite, the false report.
I understand you, sir.
Dr. Slaithwaite?
Well?
Last night, sir.
What of it?
Pray, go on.
Last night, sir, I accompanied my master to this room after he had finished at cards with Mr. Ruffin. He went in, sir, and then dismissed me.
So?
Well, he was happy, sir. He was tipsy, but he was happy. He said he had won a large amount off you, sir, on the course and at table.
I was not aware gentlemen discussed their winnings with their servants. At any rate, I think you'll find he was mistaken.
Well, that may be, sir, but he was happy. As he closed the door, he was singing Lily Bolero.
His disposition would change. You must have observed it.
Yes, sir.
There is his razor, in his blood, by his right hand.
Yet the fingers on his left hand are cut to the bone.
This is immaterial. Mr. Chark hermetically sealed himself into his own room and cut his own throat with his own razor.
As you say, it would appear so.
So the answer to the calumny was simply that the crime was impossible.
There were other doubts. Mr. Chark, it was discovered, had little or no money with him. Silas averred he had been losing very heavily. Indeed, the losses and troubles Mr. Chark had in London were adduced as motives for his act. This did not mollify suspicion, and your uncle was completely ostracized.
How unjust! And he has become religious.
He owes money, he is poor, he is isolated. It is the only occupation remaining for him.
But what do you think of him?
Silas Ruthin is himself alone. I can't define him.
The next day, Dr. Brierly asked to see me in the study. He had been a close friend of my father's and was chief executor of the will.
You know, miss, your uncle, Mr. Silas Ruthin, was talked about unpleasantly once.
You mean concerning the death of Mr. Chark at Bartram Hall?
We assume, of course, unjustly. But there are many who think quite differently.
And probably, Dr. Brierly, it was for that very reason my dear papa made him my guardian. He wished to show his high opinion of my uncle's fitness for such a trial.
There can be no doubt of that, miss. It was to purge him of the scandal. But if you should happen to die, miss, during your minority, we are all mortal and there are 3 years and some months to go. How would it be then, don't you see?
But he is my near relative.
The whole of the property will go to him, and he has custody of your person in the meantime. You are to live in his house under his care and authority. Don't you see, miss, it is not a fit position to put your uncle in. If you made up your mind you would rather be placed under the care of, say, your cousin, Lady Knollys, I will endeavour all I can to effect it.
But that could not be done without his consent, could it?
No, but I don't despair of getting that, on terms, of course.
I don't quite understand.
I mean, for instance, if he were to keep the allowance for your maintenance.
Surely it is not the allowance that is my uncle's object, but rather the moral value of the position.
We might, at any event, try him. I must be in London the day after tomorrow. Bartram Howe is 60 miles from here, and only 20 of that I find by rail. But if you say try, I'll see him tomorrow morning.
Very well. Yes, Dr. Brierly.
You have resolved wisely and well.
2 days later, Cousin Monica and I received Dr. Brierly's dispatch from his campaign.
I this day saw Mr. Silas Ruthin at Bartram Howe, and he peremptorily refuses on any terms to vacate the guardianship or to consent to Miss Ruthin residing anywhere but under his own immediate care. He bases his refusal twofold. First, upon a conscientious duty, declaring that he has no right through fear of personal contingencies to abdicate an office imposed in so solemn a way, and so naturally devolving on him as only brother of the deceased. Second, the effect such a withdrawal at the instance of the chief executor would have upon his own character, amounting to a public self-condemnation. As Mr. Ruthin refused to discuss these positions with me, I could make no way whatsoever with him. Therefore, after a short time, I took my leave. He mentioned that preparations for his niece's reception are being completed, and that he will send for her in a few days.
There. It is settled.
We were foolish to raise our hopes.
You won't forsake me, Cousin Monica?
No, darling, never. Don't part with Mary Quince. They'll want you to, but don't.
Well, I have no intention.
They'll say she's not fit for a lady's maid, as she certainly is not. But she is attached, trustworthy, and honest. And these are qualities valuable everywhere, especially in a solitude.
Yes. Yes, I know her qualities are...
Can she write, in case you were ill? Can she take a message exactly?
But you'll come and see me, won't you, as often as you can?
Yes, dear. That is, if Silas allows me.
Why should he not allow you?
I'm sure he will. Perhaps he will allow you to come to me now and then for a short visit. I am only 7 miles away from Bartram Howe, a little more than half an hour's drive. You know, I haven't been to Bartram for over 20 years.
Why, now is your opportunity to renew.
I have never understood Silas. I fancy he forgives no sins, whether of omission or commission. Yes, I shall. I will call at Bartram.
The day of my departure arrived. I took my leave of Mrs. Rusk, a housekeeper for as long as I could remember.
God bless you, Miss Maud, darling. And you must not fret, mind. The time won't be long going over. No time at all. And you'll be bringing back a fine young gentleman. Well, who knows, as great as the Duke of Wellington for your husband.
Oh, Mrs. Rusk.
I'll take best care of everything. And the birds and the dogs till you come back. I'll come and see you and Mary, if you'll allow, in Derbyshire.
Mrs. Rusk.
And Mary Quince and I got into the carriage, and we were off. And the last I heard of Noel was the dogs.
Miss Maud.
Yes, Mary?
Are you crying?
Yes, Mary. A little.
I'm minded to join you, save that the carriage would be damp.
So, Mary.
So, Miss Maud.
What kind of life do you think we shall lead at Bartram Howe?
I have no notion.
Neither have I. But I am sure it will be secluded.
Bartram Howe is in Derbyshire.
That is so, Mary.
I've never been out of Warwickshire.
Eight hours later, we arrived at Bartram. It was dark.
Well, there!
Well, Mary?
Is she here? Is she here?
Miss Maud.
Now are we in Derbyshire?
Yes and no, it's my cousin in the court.
She is!
Then why don't you let her out, you stupid? Oh. You're very welcome to Bartram. I said you're very welcome to Bartram.
Thank you.
I'm your cousin Millie. I'd let you out myself, only I dare go down the steps. The governor said I mustn't.
I'll hand you down, miss.
Thank you.
I'll take the boxes into the house.
Yeah, miss.
Thank you. She's coming, she's coming.
Mary.
Here, miss.
Let us go into the house.
Oh, she's finally here. Maud.
Millie.
Give your cousin a hearty boss. She needs a kiss.
Cousin!
You'll want to take off your cape, then talk to the governor.
Who's the governor?
Father, of course. He's a bit frail. He took a pain on Friday. Neuralgia, he calls it, but if it's anyone else, it's rheumatism. So he's sitting in his own room.
Why won't he let you... No, it's not right to ask.
Ask what you like, cousin. I can only say nay.
Why won't he let you down the steps? Aren't you allowed out of the house?
Oh, that's just his fancy for today. Tomorrow will be different. Who's the old one?
This is my maid, Mary Quince.
Oh, the maid! And a precious old one at that!
I hope you don't think
Oh, you're welcome, Quince, you're welcome. It's only a bit of chaff. Oh,
thank you. Miss...
Millie! Millie, just plain Millie. Now, I'll take you to the governor.
Mind how you make a noise.
What do you mean?
The governor's sharp as a weasel. Nothing vexes him like that.
Is he a martinet?
Now, I don't know what you mean.
Pray enter.
It's my cousin Maud.
I had scarcely anticipated otherwise. Welcome, my dear niece.
Thank you, my dear uncle.
You have the look of your father upon you.
I hope that is a cause for consolation rather than concern.
How felicitously put. Pray sit down. That includes you, Millicent.
Yes.
I need not introduce my daughter. She saved me that mortification.
Well, on the contrary, it's been a pleasure.
You'll find her, I believe, good-natured and affectionate. Au rest, I fear a very rustic Miranda, more fitted for the society of a Caliban than of a sick old Prospero. Is that not so, Millicent?
I don't know who they be, neither one nor t'other.
You see, my dear Maud, what a Shakespearean you have for a cousin. You see her, poor thing, a result of all the combined disadvantages. She wants refined education, refined companionship, and, I fear, naturally, refined tastes.
I hope I can make some modest contribution to the second.
In the meantime, she warbles her native wood notes wild.
You're too clever for
me. A sojourn at a good French conventual school will do wonders, and that I hope to arrange by and by.
He's always threatening me with...
Millicent! Let us jest at our misfortune and love one another, I hope, cordially. Yes, I hope cordially.
I am sure we shall. The next day I explored the woods around Bartram, with Millie as my companion.
Who's that girl ahead?
That's Zamiel's daughter.
And who is Zamiel?
He's the miller. See,
yonder it is.
Mill not going today, Beauty?
No, Millie, it's not.
Hey, what's gone with the stile? It's torn away from its paling.
Why?
So it be.
Who's been and done all that?
Not you or me, lass.
Old Zamiel, your father did it.
Happen it was.
And the gate locked.
That's it, the gate
locked. And where's Zamiel?
Up to the side somewhere. How should I know where he is?
Who's got the key?
Here it be, lass.
How dare you stay us? Undo it,
Hussey, this minute.
Open the gate this instant.
Well, I won't.
I could get over the paling as soon as look at you, but I won't. Open the gate, I say, or I'll make you.
Do leave her alone, dear. She's been ordered, maybe, not to open it. Is it not so, my good girl?
Well, you are not the biggest fool of the two.
And who ordered you?
Father.
That's something to lay at, that is. Our servant shutting us out of our own ground.
He's no servant of yours.
Come, lass, what do you mean?
He's old Silas's miller. And what's that to you?
Oh, so I am. And what's that to you, eh?
Open the gate.
So you'd go where you like, would you? And do never what pleases you.
I am Miss Maud Ruthin of Knowle, and Mr. Silas Ruthin, your master, is my uncle.
Oh, you she as comes overnight, eh? But Maud or no Maud, I wouldn't let the Duke himself set foot outside the fairing without Silas had let him. And you may tell Silas, them's the words of Zamiel Oakes, and I'll stick to them. And what's more, I'll tell him myself I will.
I'll complain of you to my uncle.
Do so. Happen you find yourself in the wrong box. You can't say I set the dogs on you, not call you so much as a wrong name, not even aimed a stone at you, can you? Well then, where's the complaint then?
Be good enough to leave me.
Well, I'll make no objections. Mind, I'm taking your word, you're Maud Ruthin. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. I'm not aware of it, but I take your word. Good afternoon, Miss Ruthin. And Miss Ruthin. Meg.
Yeah!
Very well, then.
Oh, Miss Maud.
I don't know who you are.
I'm White, the housekeeper.
I wish to see my uncle. Is he within?
He is and he is not.
I don't understand you.
Come in and see for yourself.
He's ill. He's dying.
Oh, turn the wheeze. Oh, begging your pardon, miss, but he's just sitting in his chair by his fire in a world of his own.
Shouldn't we fetch the doctor?
Don't make no noise, miss, till he talks. You come to for a bit soon.
Is he off yet?
Ah, the girl. Austin's child. Well, dear, I'm hardly able. I'll speak tomorrow. Next day. Is this trying? Neuralgia or something? Torture. Tell her.
Come away, miss. You'll not be fit to talk to you now a day, all day, maybe. Come away.
He looks as if he's dying. Should we send for a doctor?
Oh, bless you. Doctor knows all about it.
It can't be safe to leave him to chance or nature to get through these terrible attacks.
There's no fear of him. He's no fit, and he's none the worse for it. He's just a bit silly now and again. It's been the same a dozen year, and the doctor knows all about it.
The miller's behaviour had disturbed me, so I resolved to speak to his daughter, the creature called Beauty.
Good morning.
Good morning, miss.
This is the way to the mill.
That's right, miss.
Do you work at Bartram?
I work at Stables, miss.
And what is your name?
Tom Bryce, miss.
Tom Bryce. Haven't I seen you before?
Not that I know of.
Are you a good whip? Do you drive well?
I drive a plough with most lads hereabouts.
Have you ever been to Knowle?
No.
Here, Tom, is half a crown.
Oh, thank you, miss. That'd be very good.
Now, Tom, you'll tell me, have you ever been to Knowle?
I might have been, but I don't mind no such place, no.
Now, Tom, recollect yourself and tell me the truth, and I'll be a friend to you. Did you drive a coach with several gentlemen which came to the grounds of Knowle when the party had their lunches on the grass and there was a quarrel with the gamekeepers? Try, Tom, to recollect. You should, upon my honour, have no trouble about it.
I never drove a coach in my days, miss. And I've never been out of Derbyshire but thrice to Warwick Fair with horses by rail and twice to York.
You're certain, Tom?
Certain. Sure. Begging your pardon, miss, but why did the gentleman go on a coach? Why didn't they ride?
I continued to the windmill. This day, it was working.
I'll take you!
No! I was appalled.
No!
I turned and ran. I won't let him do it. I'll stop him.
You see, my dear child, they are rough persons. Their ideas are not ours.
But he struck her violently on the head, Uncle, and she was bleeding very fast.
Their young people must be chastised, and in a way we would look upon in a serious light.
I really think if he goes on treating her with so much cruelty, he may injure her very seriously.
I found it a bad plan, interfering in strictly domestic undertakings, and should rather not.
Or he may perhaps kill her.
Why, you romantic little child. People in that rank of life think absolutely nothing of a broken head.
But is it not brutality?
To be sure it is brutality. But then you must remember they are brutal, and it suits them.
I will bid you good night, sir.
There is one small thing more.
Yes, sir?
You have as your companion a rather elderly lady.
Yes, Mary Quince, my maid.
Mary Quince, your maid. Are you very attached to her?
Why do you ask, sir?
She's really suited to attend to someone like yourself. Crabbed age and youth cannot live together. I'm sure I could supply you with someone more suitable.
I am very attached to Mary Quince, and I think she is devoted to me.
Why then, I shall pursue the matter no further.
At the end of May, Dr. Brierley came to see my uncle on business. Naturally, I was not party to it, but afterwards...
Glad to find you alone for a minute. Very glad. I want to know, are you really quite comfortable here?
Quite.
You've only your cousin's company.
Yes,
But Millie and I are very happy together.
Well, that's very nice, but I think there are no teachers of any kind, are there?
No. My uncle thinks it better I should lay in a store of health.
I know. And the carriage and horses you promised have not come? How soon are they expected?
I really can't say, and I assure you I don't much care. I think running about great fun.
You walk to church?
Yes. Uncle Silas's carriage wants a new wheel, he tells me.
Aye, but a young lady of your rank, it is not usual she should be without the use of a carriage. Have you horses to ride?
No.
Your uncle, you know, has a very liberal allowance for your maintenance and education.
Are you suggesting he is misappropriating it?
I'm observing he has supplied it, but does not appear to be disbursing it. Is he kind to you?
He is affectionate, in his fashion.
Well, why doesn't he keep company with you? Does he ever dine with you, or drink tea, or talk to you?
He is a miserable invalid. His hours and regimen are peculiar. He is, I believe, often insensible for a long time, when his mind is in a strange, feeble state.
I dare say, worn out in his young days. And I saw that preparation of opium in his bottle. He takes too much.
And what do you think his complaint is?
One way or another, he's been all his days working on his nerves and his brain. These men of pleasure who have no other pursuit use themselves up mostly and pay a smart price for their sins. Have you been thinking at all about that other matter? I mean about getting your uncle to forgo his guardianship.
I have not thought of it at all.
I would not mind his first refusal. You could make it worth his while unless he... That is, unless he's very unreasonable indeed.
I am very fond of my cousin Millie.
How long have you been here exactly?
Almost 3 months.
Have you seen your other cousin yet, the young gentleman?
No.
Aren't you very lonely?
I was, as you know, prepared for it.
You'd be pleasanter somewhere else, with Lady Knollys, for instance, eh?
Well, there certainly.
This is not a fit place for you.
The following week, Cousin Monica fulfilled her promise.
My dearest Maud.
Oh, Monica.
Now, let me look at you. You are well?
Oh, even better for seeing you.
Oh, you have no idea what self-denial I have exercised to bring this visit about. I have actually written 5 letters to Silas, and I don't think I said a single impertinent thing in one of them.
Really, dear, this is your cousin, Lady Knollys.
And so you are Millicent. Well, dear, I am very glad to see you, and we must be very good friends, you funny creature. I'm allowed to be the most saucy old woman in Derbyshire, and nobody is ever affronted with me, so I say the most shocking things constantly.
I'm a bit that way myself, and I think...
You think? Oh, now, take my advice, and never wait to think, my dear. Talk first and think afterwards. That is my way, though indeed I can't say I ever think at all. And now, do you think, girls, you could be ready to come away with me if Silas gives leave in an hour or two? I should so like you both to visit Elverston.
Oh, how delightful. Oh, yes, darling, for my part, I should be ready in 5 minutes. What do you say, Millie? Millie?
What did she say?
There's a deal of my slops in the wash.
In the name of wonder, what does my cousin mean?
My best petticoat is away at the laundress.
Mr. Ruthven will see you now.
Come, girls.
You see a change, Monica.
I do see a change, Silas. And no doubt so do you in me. A great change.
The change is not as great as time would lead me to expect.
It has been a long time, Silas, but that, you know, is not my fault.
Not your fault, my dear. Your instinct. We're all instinctive creatures. The great people ostracized me, and the small ones followed.
Now, Silas, I am not here to quarrel. If we quarrel now, mind, we can never make it up. We are too old.
My personal wrongs I can quite forgive, and I do, heaven knows, from my heart. Will you shake hands?
With all my heart.
Here, I do strike a truce, and do forget and forgive everything. See, girls, Lady Knollys and I, cousins long estranged, forget and forgive the past, and join hands over its buried injuries. My dear niece, your presence at Bartram has wrought this reconciliation.
Well, I am pleased to have been the occasion.
I wish so much, dear Monica, that I could ask you to stay tonight. But absolutely I have not a bed to offer. And even if I had, I fear my suit would hardly prevail.
Silas.
Monica.
I have a request.
Pray adumbrate it.
I should like to invite Maud and Millicent to stay with me at Elverston for a few days.
Now, when would you like them to come?
They could go with me today, when I return.
What, all my pretty chicks gone? There is a difficulty. I shall not bore you by going into it, but suffice it to say it is substantial. A difficulty in their going with you today. However, on a future day, soon, very soon, I shall be most happy to send them.
Thank you, Silas.
It will be a pleasure.
Silas, I shall hold you to it. Millie, my dear, will you put on your hat and you and Maud show me the grounds about the house? May they, Silas? I should like to renew my acquaintance.
You'll see them sadly neglected, Monnie. A poor man's pleasure grounds must rely on nature and trust to her for effects.
Now, girls, what do you say? Will he let you come? Yes or no?
I don't know. You never do with the governor.
Is that what you call him?
I always have.
You are to come with me, you shall. I'll manage it.
Oh, look at the herons.
Oh, he ought to let you see a little more of the world than appears among the glens and the bushes.
There's an old grey trout by the bridge. I'll see if he's there.
Yes, you do that.
I won't be long.
You have been talking to Dr. Briley.
I know of his conversation with you.
Do you intend to go alone?
I implore you, Maud, to think of this seriously. When you come to me, you shall do so with the intention of remaining at Elverston.
Cousin Monica, is this fair? You and Dr. Briley both talk in the same awful way to me, yet you won't, either of you, say exactly what you mean.
I don't like this place, and I don't like Silas. I've tried, you've seen me, but I can't, and I think I never shall. You must know, my dear Maud, what a prize you are. You are an immense trust.
One evening in mid-June, Uncle Silas summoned me to his study.
You'll excuse my not rising, dear Maud. I'm so miserably ill this evening.
I am sorry your health reduces you to this state.
Yes, I am to be pitied. I sent for you to make you acquainted with your cousin, my son. Where are you, Dudley?
Here, father.
Come, sir, we must not be modest. Here's your cousin Maud. What do you say?
How are you, miss?
You are...
Miss? Come. Miss has no missus. She is Maud and you Dudley. She'll not refuse to shake your hand, will you, dear Maud? Come, young gentleman, speak for yourself.
How are you, Maud? You're welcome to Bartram Hall, miss.
Kiss your cousin, sir. Where's your gallantry? On my honour, I discern you.
No. Let us shake hands.
There.
Well, that will do, I suppose. In my time, first cousins did not meet like strangers. But perhaps we were wrong. We are learning modesty from the Americans, and old English ways are too gross for us.
I have seen him before. That is...
Why, this is news. You never told me. When have you met, eh, Dudley?
Never saw him a day, so far as I'm aware of.
No? Well then, Maud, would you enlighten us?
I did see that young gentleman before.
Meaning me, ma'am?
Yes, certainly you. I did, Uncle.
And where was it, my dear?
I met him, Uncle. Your son... That young gentleman, I saw him, I should say, at Church Scarsdale, and afterwards with some other persons in the grounds at Knoll. There was an altercation with the gamekeepers.
Well, Dudley, what do you say to that?
I was never at them places, so help me. I don't know where they are, and I've never set eyes on the young lady before.
You look so uncomfortable, Maud, at the idea of having seen him before. There was plainly something disagreeable. Dudley, you were not at these places?
I wish I may be smitten.
There, that will do. Your honour and word as a gentleman, and that you are, although an impecunious one, will quite satisfy your cousin Maud. Am I right, dear?
I swear by Almighty God that I've never
That's
seen...
enough. Now shake hands again, if you won't kiss like cousins.
Thank you, miss.
You'll want some supper, Dudley, so Maud and I will excuse you going. Good night, dear boy.
Good night, father. Good night, cousin Maud.
That's as fine a young fellow, I think, as any English father can boast for his son. True, brave, and kind, and quite an Apollo. I've seen something of the world in my day, and I can say without a misgiving of partiality that Dudley is the material of a perfect English gentleman. I'm not blind, of course. The training must be supplied. A year or two of good models, active self-criticism, and good society. I simply say that the material is there. You have nothing to say?
I'm glad he has your approbation.
About these places, church, whatever it is.
Church Scarsdale.
And the grounds at Knowle. I never knew him to utter an untruth. He was not there.
After a few days, my cousin insisted we became better acquainted.
Afternoon.
Will you have something, Dudley?
Oh, no, lass, but I'll look at you both and maybe drink a drop for company. Curate's up with Governor. I wanted a word with him, but I suppose I'll hardly get in this hour or more, praying and disputing and Bible-chopping as usual. Mind, won't hold much longer. Now that Uncle Austin's dead, there's nowt to be made of praying.
Oh, you sinner! Dudley wasn't in a church these 5 years, and then only to meet a young lady.
I wonder, Millie, at your laughing. How can you laugh?
You'd have me cry, would you?
I certainly would not have you laugh.
Oh, I know I wish someone would cry for me, and I know who. No disrespect about your father.
No?
These parsons, the awful slow coaches. I should be 3 miles away and more by this time. And why can't folks stick to a Sunday? Millie, lass, will you see if the governor be finished with curate? I'm losing a whole day.
Oh, you're a woundy, ugly customer in a wax.
I say, it is a hard case. A lad of spirit should be kept so tight.
Perhaps my uncle thinks you should earn some for yourself.
Well, I'd like to know how a fellow's to earn money nowadays. I mean, you wouldn't have a gentleman keep a shop, I fancy. But I'll have a fistful soon. Those executors, you know, owes me a great deal of money. Very honest chaps, of course, but they're cursed slow about paying.
Are you referring?
And I tell you, Maud, when I get the tin, I know who I'll buy a fairing for. I do, lass. And there's something, lass, I must have in return. Honour thy father, you know. I mean, you'd not have me disobey the governor.
I don't understand you.
Oh, I'd back those eyes against the country, I would.
Your tone, sir, is becoming...
You're awful pretty, you are, Maud. I don't know what came over me the other night when the governor told me to bust you. But you won't deny me now. I'll have a kiss, lass, in spite of their blushes.
I will not.
Well, if she isn't going to fight me, now come on, Maud. You would not be so ill-natured, surely. I mean, it's only our duty. The governor bid us to.
Don't. Don't, sir. Stand back or I'll call the servants.
What?
Millie! Millie! Millie!
Oh, that's how it is. That's how it is with all the cattle. You never know your own mind. You make such a row, a bit of play.
Millie!
Stop it, will you? There's no one harming you. Morning, Maud.
Mr. Ruffin?
Oh, Maud. Don't be distant with your cousin.
Sir?
Is it not hard lines? Now, Maud, is it not hard lines?
Is what hard lines?
There's the governor, says he hasn't a bob. How does an old fellow in his bedroom muddle away money at that rate? I don't suppose he thinks I can get along without tin. Is it not hard lines?
I hardly think I am the right person to apply to for it.
No, it's not that. I never known a real beauty. First chop, I mean, that wasn't kind along of it. I'm a fellow as can't get along without sympathy. And that's why I said it. Isn't it hard lines? Now say it's hard lines, ain't it, Maud?
I suppose it is very disagreeable.
No, that's just it. I knew you'd say it, Maud. You're a kind lass, you are. It's in your pretty face. I like you awful well, I do. There's not a handsomer lass in Liverpool or London itself. No. No.
Keep your distance, sir.
No offence, lass. No harm. Maud, you must not be so shy. We're cousins, you know. I wouldn't hurt you, Maud. No more than I'd knock my own head off, I wouldn't.
I'm glad to hear it.
I shall be going away for a week, if I can get the tin. Don't think badly of me.
He got the tin.
I sent for you, dear, because I desire to have no secrets.
2 days after Dudley's departure...
And wish you thoroughly to know all that concerns your interests while subject to my guardianship.
Events now came pell-mell.
I am happy to think, my beloved niece, that you requite my candour. Oh, here is the gentleman. Sit down, dear Maud.
Mr. Ruffin.
Forgive me, I cannot rise.
You seem better than when I last saw you.
However, I cannot rise.
How do you do, miss?
Very well, thank you, Dr. Riley.
I'm glad to find one person in health. I think I may as well take a chair, sir.
If you wish.
Thank you. You understand the nature of the business, sir? Do you wish Miss Ruthin to remain?
I sent for her, sir.
Very well.
This gentleman, my dear Maud, thinks it proper to insinuate that I am robbing you. It surprises me a little, and no doubt you. I've nothing to conceal and wish you to be present while he favours me more particularly with his views. I am right, I think, in describing it as robbery, sir?
Why, it would be, certainly, taking that which does not belong to you and converting it to your own use. But at the worst, it would more resemble thieving, I think, than robbery.
Your note says appropriation, I think, sir.
Yes. The receipt of money is not then disbursed to their proper use, as I am informed.
Detectives or private spies of your own? No doubt bribed with my poor brother's money.
Uncle.
Niece. A very high-minded procedure.
Nothing of the kind, sir.
Really?
I mean, sir, there has been no undue canvas for evidence. The question is simply one of right. It is our duty to see this inexperienced young lady is not defrauded.
By her uncle?
By anyone.
Of course you come armed with an opinion.
The case is before Mr. Sergeant Grinders. He has not yet returned it.
Then you have no opinion.
My solicitor is quite clear upon it. And it seems to me there can be no question raised but for form's sake.
Yes, for form's sake. And in the meantime, upon a nice question of law, the surmises of a thick-headed attorney and an ingenious divine are sufficient warrant for telling my niece and ward, in my presence, that I am defrauding her.
I don't know whether I use that expression, sir, but I am speaking merely in a technical sense.
I am a technical defrauder, I see, and your manner conveys the rest. I thank my God, sir, that I am a very different man from what I once was. I should certainly have knocked you down for a great deal less.
But seriously, sir, what do you propose?
I propose to defend my rights, sir. I am not without an opinion, though you are.
You seem to think, sir, that I have a pleasure in annoying you. You're quite wrong. But don't you see, sir, as chief executor, the position I'm placed in?
I neither deny nor admit anything.
So?
So, sir, if you please, sir, you will never more present yourself under any pretext whatsoever, either in this house or the grounds of Bartram Howe, during my lifetime.
Uncle,
quiet, Maud. This interview is terminated.
Goodbye, sir. Do you think, miss, that you could afford me a word in the hall?
Not a word, sir.
I should...
Sit where you are, Maud. If you have anything to say to my ward, sir, you will please to say it in here.
I was going to say that if you think of any way I can be of the least service, miss, I am ready to act. Any way. That's all, miss.
Would you shake hands with me, Dr. Briley, before you go?
Of course. Goodbye, miss.
What am I to do? What am I to do?
Oh, please don't distress yourself, Miss Maud.
He has forbidden me to see him.
I don't see what else he could do.
Cut me off from sound financial sense.
You never really did care for Dr. Briley.
I begin to get some inkling of what my uncle is about.
I think he's strange, but not vicious.
I can always write to Dr. Briley.
Do you have an address?
Oh, I can find one.
Your uncle would stop the letter from going out.
Well, yet you say he is not vicious.
Well, it is his duty. He sees every letter that goes out of the house.
He opens them?
No, but they pass through his hands.
I shall have to go down to the village.
You will be seen.
Then you will have to go down to the village.
They would see if I posted anything.
Then we shall have to find someone else.
I don't see why you're so worried.
There is Cousin Monica. You are right, Mary. I am over-agitated. I cannot abide scenes. Why haven't Millie and I been to Elverston yet?
Back again, like a bad apron, you see.
I see.
How have you been ever since last? Right well, I warrant by your looks. Oh, I'm jolly glad to see you, I am.
I think I must ask you to let go my hand.
Anything to pleasure you, Maud.
Thank you.
I've been to Wolverhampton, lass. A jolly row there. And run over to Leamington. Almost broke my neck, Faith, with a borrowed horse after the dogs. You would not care, Maud, if I broke my neck, would you? Well, happened just a little. Only a bit over a week since I left here by George, and to me it's half the almanac. Can you guess the reason, Maud?
Have you seen your sister or your father since your return?
They'll keep, Maud. It's you I want to see. I tell you, lass, I'm always thinking of you.
I think you ought to go and see your father. You've been away.
I don't think it's respectful.
If you bid me go, I'd almost go, but I could not quite. There's nothing on earth I would not do for you, Maud, except leaving you.
And that is the only thing on earth I would ask you to do.
Blessed if you aren't blushing, Maud.
It's too bad.
Oh, you're angry with me now, just because you think I got into trouble at Wolverhampton. You are. You are.
I don't understand you, sir. And I beg that you'll leave me.
And that's the one thing I can't do. I'm just a child in your hands, I am, you know. Look at me here. Just a child, I say, in your hands.
Why can't you leave me alone, sir?
Maud, how can you be so ill-natured when you see me like this? How can you?
I wish Millie would come.
Well, I'll tell you how it is, Maud. I may as well have it out. I like you better than any lass I ever saw, a deal. You're nice by chalks. There's none like you. There isn't. And I wish you'd have me. I haven't much tin. Father's run through a deal. He's pretty well up a tree, you know. But though I ain't as rich as some folk, I'm a better man. If you'd take a tidy lad that likes you awful and would die for your sake, why, here he is.
What can you mean, sir?
I mean, Maud, if you'll marry me, you'll never have cause to regret it.
Actually, a proposal.
Actually, a proposal. Oh, good lass, you would not deny me.
What has there ever been, sir, in my conduct, words or looks, to warrant this unparalleled audacity? But that you are as stupid as you are impertinent, brutal and ugly, you must long ago, sir, have seen how I dislike you. How dare you, sir? Well,
look here, lass, I don't
think... Don't presume to obstruct me. I'm going to my uncle. Your son, sir, has insulted me.
Insulted you? You surprise me. How? How has Dudley insulted you, my dear child? I did not know he was here. Come, you're excited. Sit down.
Now,
take time and tell me all about it.
It is an insult. He knew very well. He must know how I dislike him, and he presumed to make a proposal of marriage to me.
Aha! And that is the amount of your complaint. He made you a formal proposal of marriage.
I hardly see it as anything to laugh.
No, my dear little Maud. My dear Maud, however just, you appear to me a little cruel. You are yourself to blame. You have a faithful friend whom I advise you consult. Your looking glass. The foolish fellow is young, quite ignorant of the world's ways. He is in love, and aimer et craindre, c'est souffrir. We must not be too hard on him.
I am surprised, Uncle, that you find...
But after all, is it quite such a folly? It really strikes me, dear Maud, that the subject may be worth a second thought.
But Uncle, you can't...
No, you won't refuse to hear me. I am, of course, assuming you are fancy-free. I am assuming also you don't care tuppence about Dudley, and that you view him with some aversion. There is nothing like beginning with a little aversion.
Uncle, I cannot believe you would be so cynical...
Believe me, I speak out of experience. There are one or two points you must bear in mind. One of the happiest privileges of your fortune is that you may, without imprudence, marry simply for love. There are few men in England who could offer you an estate comparable to that you already possess, or in fact appreciably increase the splendour of your fortune.
I see you have thought about this.
As should you. If, therefore, Dudley were in all other respects eligible, I can't see his poverty would be an objection to weigh for one moment. My good fellow, I happen to be talking about my son and should rather not be overheard.
Oh. Well, very good, then.
Dudley has fine qualities. The most affectionate son, in his rough way, that ever father was blessed with. Indomitable courage and a high sense of honour. And lastly, he has the Ruthin blood. The purest blood, I maintain, in England. I am also anxious my boy should not be dismissed from his home. You see, my dear, he must be if you persevere in rejecting his suit.
I have no wish.
I cannot do but otherwise. It would not be proper. I beg you, reserve your decision to this day week, when I will, with much pleasure, hear what you may have to say on the subject. But till then, observe me not a word.
Beauty's sick, Maud.
What with?
rheumatic fever.
Is it infectious?
The sawbone says no more than a broken leg.
Millie and I spent the week in nursing.
Your daughter is very ill, I hear.
Aye, she'll be costing me a handful, like her mother did.
When did the illness commence?
It was the day the mayor was shot. Saturday. I talked to it at workhouse, but they wouldn't give me notes.
The doctor costs nothing.
Aye, and does nothing. If she keeps on that way, I'll leave her flat and see how the workhouse like that.
Well, maybe we can be of some use.
Maybe.
Millie?
Maud, she is totally neglected. We know what we must do. Little by little, our patient began to recover.
I think, Meg, you ought to thank Miss Millie.
I'll not thank her.
I don't mind if she don't...
Very well, very well.
It's not her I should be thanking. It's you.
Maud?
Uncle?
The chair?
Thank you, Uncle. I prefer standing.
I too shall stand. You saw the luggage corded and addressed as it stands ready for removal in the hall?
Mr. Dudley A. Ruffin, Paris, via Dover.
I am old, agitated, on the eve of a decision on which much depends. Pray relieve my suspense. Is my son to leave Bartram today in sorrow or to remain in joy?
Uncle, I have thought long and hard, and I...
No, I crave one moment before you pronounce your doom. I have one final thing to say. I'm very miserable, very nearly desperate. What remains for me? What remains? Fortune has done her worst, thrown me in the dust, her wheels rolled over me, and the servile world who follows her chariot like a mob has stamped upon the mangled wretch. But this old hectic, this old epileptic, this old spectre of wrongs, calamities and follies, has still one hope. My manly, though untutored son, the last male scion of the Ruffins. He loves you, as none but the very young can love, but that once only in a life, a Ruffin, the best blood in England, the last man of the race. Maud, have I lost him? His fate, my fate, I may say Millie's fate, we all await your sentence. If I lose him, then I lose all. And you will see me in my coffin before many months. I stand before you in the attitude of a supplicant. Shall I kneel?
Oh, Uncle, Uncle!
You see my suspense. You see my miserable and frightful suspense. You are kind, Maud. You love your father's memory and are the living trust he placed in his brother, me. You would not betray that trust. You would not say no and place a pistol at my head.
Oh, I must. I must say no. Oh, spare me, Uncle, for heaven's sake. Don't question me. I could not do what you ask.
I yield, Maud. I yield, my dear.
Oh, Uncle, how can I ever...
I will not press you. I will not question you. You shall have time, your own time to think. I will accept no answer now.
But
no, Maud, none.
He's trying to wear me down.
How is he doing that?
By not accepting a no. By not accepting a no.
Mr. Dudley is his son.
He's hoping to make me relent. But I won't, Mary. I won't.
No, Miss Maud.
What will he do when he realizes?
Realizes?
When he realizes I am not going to change my mind. I have been under my uncle's roof for almost 4 months, and I still don't know what manner of man he is.
When we could not walk in the grounds, Millie and I would explore the deserted upper floors of the house.
This is it. We shouldn't be up here.
Oh, why ever not?
Nobody ever comes to this part of the house. Wyatt says it's haunted.
When have you taken any notice of Wyatt? Anyway, we can't go out. Yes, this must be it.
What's riding you?
This must be the room in which Mr. Chark died.
Who's Mr. Chark?
Yes, look there, the inner courtyard.
Who's Mr. Chark?
And all the wainscoting is torn off.
Who's Mr. Chark?
Nobody's told you. He was found dead here one morning, with his throat cut end to end.
Oh, don't, Maudie.
And nobody could get in, and nobody could get out.
Look at that stain on the floorboards.
I suppose it won't scrub out.
Maud? La, 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 la. Why are you singing that?
I don't know.
Yes, I do know. La 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 la. Maud.
My dear Maud. My dear, dear child.
Madame de la Rochia?
You see, I have not forgotten you. And you, I think, have not forgotten me.
I had fainted.
In part two of Uncle Silas by Sheridan Le Fanu, Maud was played by Teresa Gallagher and Silas by George Cole. Lady Monica Knollys, Joan Sims, Madame de la Rougière, Dorothy Tutin, Mary Quince, Kathleen Byron, Mrs. Rusk, Tessa Worsley, Millie, Jane Whittenshaw, Dudley, Jonathan Keeble, Dr. Brierly, John Hartley, Zamiel, George A. Cooper, Beauty, Becky Hindley, Wyatt, Pauline Letts. Chark's Servant, David Collings, Dr. Slaithwaite, John Evitts, Tom Bryce, Roger May, The Coachman, Stephen Critchlow, Mr. Grimston, Geoffrey Whitehead. Uncle Silas was dramatized for radio by Alan Drury and directed by Enid Williams.